Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the Croncast, welcome to Ghost Story Roundtable with us, your hosts. I'm John.
I'm Luke.
And I'm Josh.
And we're going to get spooky.
Spooky pooky.
We all live in different communities. We've all been exposed to different folk tales and folklore of our different towns. I think it'd be fun to share some of the weird ghost stories and horror stories that are shared within our communities.
And we'll just go a little bit off the cuff here. These are not rehearsed, written down stories that I'm aware of. It looks like all of us just sort of thought, hey, it would be good to talk about some of the things that we grew up with, maybe stories that we've heard, things we've experienced, and relay those, I don't know, to the
This is the real deal oral tradition.
Yeah.
So earlier in the episode, John mentioned that the ghost stories he likes are those ghost stories that come from a community, like things that people believe happened, or at least there's some possibility, some nugget of truth there potentially, or at least someone believed they saw something.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to share with you now. So who wants to go first?
Well, I think it's interesting that we all lived in different places. I'm from Indiana. Josh is from Kentucky. Luke is from Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
Those are three very different states that have very different histories, and therefore I think are going to have very different ghost stories. Wouldn't you think, Luke?
I think so. But I think there's some common reflections. Like, we're all coming sort of from the middle of America.
Middle of nowhere.
Areas that were sort of wilderness at one point in time. I mean, all areas can sort of fall under that, but there's less of a history of European sort of colonization in the areas that we're talking about, as opposed to like 13 colonies, right?
Right.
So, and I know, at least with me growing up in Arkansas, one thing that I found fascinating when I moved to Kentucky was how much older everything felt, that you could walk around and see, Fort Boonesboro or areas where Daniel Boone were. That was, decades and decades and decades before places cropped up in Arkansas, right? And so really what I learned in history with Arkansas was, a lot of the first people that were there originally, and then once you get into what sort of Europeans were there, you touch on the various explorers, the Ponce de Leon, that kind of thing that may have come through. But until like the Civil War, you really didn't get a lot of like established governmental sort of history that played out the same way that you would get in, say, Virginia, or Pennsylvania or something like that.
Yeah.
But since Kentucky is the oldest of our three states, Josh, do you want to start?
Okay, sure. This is not a story that happened to me. This is a story that my mom told me. And like my mom, I went to college at Morehead State, which is a school in eastern Kentucky, and it's a very rural town, very small town. The only time there's ever really traffic is when college is in session. In the summer, it's a very different place. And it's nestled sort of on the edge of the Daniel Boone National Forest. And in the Daniel Boone National Forest, near Morehead, there's a lake called Cave Run Lake. And like most of the lakes in Kentucky, it's not a real lake in that it wasn't created by glaciers. It's not created by natural processes. It's a reservoir. It's a river that was at some point dammed up, and the hills, the valleys, and everything filled up with water. Near Cave Run Lake, there is a place called Tater Knob. On the top of Tater Knob is a fire tower. And fire towers are pretty common, at least they were in the state, not many left standing now. But my great-grandfather worked in one of these fire towers. He would go up in the morning, take his lunch, he would sit in the fire tower all day and watch the surrounding forests for signs of fire. And then he would come back down and go home and go back up the next day. At this Tater Knob fire tower, if you go there, you get this really creepy sort of sensation. And maybe it's just me because my mom told me the story. And the story is this. When she was a college student in the 1970s at Morehead, we're sort of in a point in time in our history where the satanic panic is at its height.
Right, right.
And witchcraft, witch cults are sort of rumored or purported to be all around. Mom was always told never to go to Tater Knob Now, she liked to go hiking in the woods. She liked to be out at the lake. She would usually go with friends, but not all the time. And but everyone told her, look, if you go by yourself, don't go to Tater Knob because the witch cults are there. And that's where they do their evil rites. And that's where they take people and murder them and sacrifice them to the devil. And it bothered Mom. It scared her. And she gave me the same warning. Sort of halfway joking, but you could sort of tell that,
that
this story left an impression on her. And so she always would say, look, don't go to Tater Knob by yourself. And if you go there, for those of you who are in Kentucky or for those of you who like to go hiking, if you ever go to Tater Knob and you climb to the top of the hill and you go to where the fire tower was, it's not there anymore. It's burnt down. But if you go there, especially now after the forest fire, and you smell the remnants of the fire, you smell those coals that are still sort of there in the air, and you look around at the deep valleys that have been there, these mountains that have been around since Pangaea, some of the most ancient mountains in the world, and you look at these primeval forests and think, what could be out here? Could there be witch cults? Perhaps.
I like it, man. It's to think about it. So where you're talking about is really close to where I did my dissertation research. And it's like to think about being out there in the 70s, it would be absolutely isolated. And it is kind of a spooky place. Like you're sort of driving along the top of the ridgeline before you start dropping down to the river itself. Because, of course, the fire tower is up high and there's just that bend in the road. It would be a conspicuous feature if you were a witch or a warlock that was wanting to get together at a known location. That would be a good place to do it, out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's kind of spooky.
Yeah, you can see this hill from miles around.
Yeah.
It's one of the taller peaks, and from the top of it, you can see the lake, and you can see for miles around, and yeah, definitely. I mean, there are some bare rock features on that hillside that, you know, if you squint and look at it just right, it could be an altar.
So look, if you're interested in finding this on a map, Pioneer Weapons Area and the Zilpo area on the Daniel Boone National Forest. That's where we're talking about.
Yeah. And if you go, don't go alone.
Dun, dun, dun.
Nice.
Luke, you want to go next? You've got a mountain story,
sure,
too.
Sure, I do. I have a mountain story that takes place in Arkansas. And we'll go back in time to when Luke was a teenager in the hills and the mountains of western Arkansas. So I grew up in a small town, and throughout the 90s, you know, what we did for fun was basically we would go camping. That's, you know, we would go out. And I was doing that at an age of like probably 13 or 14. I had a cousin of mine that was a couple years older than me. So what that meant was by the time that he was 15 or 16 and got to where he was driving, I was a little bit younger, but I was still able to sort of take part in some of those activities. And we would go camping with various friends of ours. And so I'm not for sure what year this happened, but it had to have been like around, I don't know, 95 or 96. But it was like the last day of school. So it's like the end of spring. We're getting into summer, and myself, my cousin, and some of our buddies, we were all going camping. So we went out camping to one location, but you know, with my little school that I went to, it was like 250 people, K through 12. It was very small. But there were enough, folks that there was at least a couple groups of guys that were going camping on that Friday night that school let out. So there was the group of guys that I was with, and then also some other buddies of ours were going to another location. And so sort of on the eastern and western directions away from the little town where I grew up, right on the Oklahoma state line in Arkansas. And so we were there camping out on my grandpa's land. And when you're, you know, a 14, 15-year-old kid, you're not going to sleep. You're stoking the fire. You're sitting around. You're telling dirty stories, all that kind of stuff. And so middle of the night, we're bored, right? And we decided, hey, let's go over to the other camp that friends of ours were at sort of the opposite direction, east of the little town where I grew up. And when I say east of that little town, I mean like 15, 20 miles out into the woods, across the state highway, hit the dirt roads, and just keep going for another hour, because it's going to take you an hour to sort of drive through the dirt roads and get out to where you're going. Big patches of land owned by Weyerhaeuser, which is a paper production, monocultures of pine trees, forest kind of situation, where you've got that alongside like hollers and mountains where it's a mix of hardwood forests. So we left the camp that we were at. We were going to this other camp. I don't even know what time it was when we eventually got over to the other location, but it had to have been at least 1 or 2 in the morning at that point in time. We got there. Of course, all of the fellows that were there were up, staying up, you know, rabble-rousing, doing their thing. We hung out, you know, probably half an hour or an hour, something like that. And our big fun was driving out there and driving back, just because it took so much time. So we did that, and we started to proceed back to our campground. And so at this point, again, we were heading back to another area about an hour away, sort of on these back roads, on these little dirt gravel roads, heading out through the mountains. And we're just cruising along. And so it's myself and my cousin and two friends of ours. So that's 4 people. My cousin and I, we're both pretty big guys. And the guy that was driving the truck, of course, he owned it. And so that meant the 3 of us were riding up front. We also had a friend of ours, the number 4 guy, that didn't get to ride in the truck. So he was riding like in the back in the bed, the whole way there. So an hour, you know, drive one direction, and then an hour drive back in the back of a truck. But that's what you do, right? Like when you're a teenager doing this kind of thing. So we're cruising, on these dirt roads, and there's a conspicuous mountain sort of east of the town where I grew up in Polk County, Arkansas. And this area, like the mountain's called Hannah Mountain, like Hannah in terms of a woman's name. And the story goes that this mountainside was the side of a family. There was a family that lived there, and a girl went missing. Her name was Hannah. Years, you know, maybe this was around the Civil War period. It's hard to tell. This is all just total like oral tradition type stuff that was told to me. I don't have any sort of writing to justify any of this stuff, but it's just what we were told. But anyway, so Hannah Mountain was named after the girl that went missing. And so the ghost story that accompanies this mountain is, to this day, if you're driving along the sort of low country road that goes around the periphery of Hannah Mountain, you can look up on one slope and see a light that's representative of the father's lantern as he's sort of looking along the mid-slope positions for Hannah. They couldn't find her, but to this day you can still see the family out searching with their lantern on the slope of the mountain. And so the story is that if you were to go out on Hannah Mountain during the daytime, you would be able to see some rock outcroppings that reflect the light of the moon. So on bright moonlit nights, you actually see that. That's not what we experienced. We didn't see any lights or anything. What we had happened to us was, we're driving by Hannah Mountain in a pickup truck, like an old Ford Ranger, which was like a Ranger when it was a larger model of Ford pickup truck. And so we're cruising along, and the driver and myself and my cousin are all up front, as I said. A fellow named Ray is in the back of the truck. And Ray, he's kind of a mouthy guy at times. We've got the back glass open and we're shouting at him. And at one point, my cousin turns around and it says, you know, "Hey Ray, how are you doing?" And Ray pops off, "Oh, I'm back here. I'm pretty warm. I've got Hannah here keeping me company," insinuating some sort of, you know, sexual goings on. As soon as he said that, the front right tire of the pickup truck, like, popped and blowout, like the front right tire, total blowout. We had to pull over, and we were able to get that flat like pulled off and get the spare on, I don't know, like within five, six, 7 minutes. It was like the quickest tire change ever.
Amazing what fear can motivate you.
It was so spooky. It was so spooky. All of us were totally unnerved. Like just the timing of that event. And so to this day, I think that's my encounter with the other side, is that the ghost of Hannah got a little bit upset that somebody was making a joke at her expense, and you know, she wanted to put a little bit of scare into us, so she popped that front right tire and spooked out a bunch of teenage boys. And that's my ghost story.
That's a good one.
Yeah. You went through the veil.
John, you got a ghost story?
Yeah. I'm from a place called Tipton, Indiana. I'm from the southern side of Tipton County, and our county neighbors another county called Madison County. And so there's Tipton and Tipton County and Elwood and Madison County. Those are the two county seats. And they both hate each other. Like, they vie for which one is less shitty, sort of. Where I'm from in Indiana, there's nothing like what you two can describe as home. That's flat, it's corn, it's whatever we put there, right? It's whatever people have decided should be there. And so there's no woods to get lost in or any creepy stuff like that. There's just the cornfields in the summer, which a lot of people find unsettling, and a lot of country roads where you can get lost. So the story that I have always been told about our two counties is that, and they sort of tell it about each other, is that in either Madison County or in Tipton County, around a town called Hobbs that straddles the line, there was a couple in like World War I times, like late 1910s. Who were older. They were like 50 or 60 years old, and they somehow conceived a child. And the child was born with numerous genetic defects, and he came out looking really weird, and the mom died, and the dad had to raise this kid, who became known as Pig Man, because he looked sort of like a pig. And the dad eventually died when the kid was in his like tens or teens, and had to fend for himself. So he like slept in barns and ate chickens and stuff, and was growing up during the Great Depression. Coming of age as a pig man in that time, I can imagine, would be quite rough.
It's hard on pig people. Yeah.
He was just this outlaw that lived in the two counties. And the idea here is that they each blame the other for him.
Right.
And eventually the pig man is supposedly implicated in the death or rape of this young woman that lives in either county. Again, it depends on who's telling the story. And these guys get together and like whoop him to death, basically. And he's buried in Hobbs Cemetery, which is in the middle of nowhere. It's at the end of a dead end road, basically. And in the cemetery is what is called the hangman's tree, where they supposedly killed him and where he's buried. And you can go to the hangman tree, and if you do the right thing, of course, you can break through the other side to Pigman. So this is something that lots of people tell each other where I'm from. And the story that I was going to share is actually from my government teacher from high school, Mr. Morgan. Mr. Morgan, if you're out there listening, thank you for the story. He supposedly encountered Pigman when he was in high school. He was a football player. He's a big dude. And him and his friends were hanging out in the countryside of Tipton County. He was macking on his girl and all that, and went to take her home and dropped her off. And he had this unreliable Jeep, a Jeep Wrangler, and had a soft top and everything. And he had the top down, if I remember the story correctly. And it would stall out a lot because it was a manual. And he stalls it out on this country road after they had gone to the cemetery to like scare each other and awaken Pigman. So he's sitting in the road with his dead Jeep, his foot on the brake, trying to get it started and shifted and everything. And in the red glow of his taillights, he sees something behind him. And it's an animal. It's walking around on all four legs. And he thinks that it's really weird that there's this animal in between these two cornfields in the middle of nowhere. And he keeps his eye on it. And it starts coming towards him in the car, making all this noise. So he starts trying to get the car started more. And as it gets like 50 yards away, it stands up on its back legs and starts sprinting towards his Jeep. And he finally gets it started and gets going, and the thing ducks into the cornfield beside him, and he can hear it knocking down all the corn stalks. And so he drives really fast, and the cornfield goes on for about 3 or 4 miles, and it ends at his friend's house, who is asleep. And he drives in and wakes the friend up, like busts the door down practically to get in, and tells him what's going on. And the friend decides that they need to go hunt Pigman. And they arm up with a couple of shotguns, and the guy stands up in the back of this Jeep, and they're going to go find Pigman. They go driving around, and they can see where something has knocked down the corn stalks in this field, and they keep following it, and they keep hearing it moving around. And then eventually they end up at this one creek, and they lose it there. It disappears somehow. And to this day, he tells this story every year. It's after you finish your final in government at Tipton High School, he tells you the Pigman story, and he swears that they encountered the ghost of Pigman, that they had pissed him off, and he was after them.
That's good stuff, man.
Yeah, dude. So we're interested in your ghost story. If you have an experience, if you know something that happened to a family member, a friend, and you want to share it, let us know. Record it as a wave and email it to thecromcast@gmail.com or call us at 859-429-CROM and leave a voicemail and let us know about your brush with the other side.
Took her away, and now that she's gone, the land seems to change. The lights on the hills have never looked so strange. I pass by these houses all out of the way. A lot of my friends came from here, but none of them still live here today. As I walk alone through the ghost fields that remain, down the barren roads, I recall your ways. She bends with the wind, and he shifts like sand. I try to explain, but I'm not an eloquent man. She bends with the wind, and it shifts like sand. I try to explain, but I'm not an eloquent man. Do you understand? This girl, this boy, they were part of the land. What happens to the places that we used to tend? He's a hard one to trust, and she's a roving ghost. Will you come back? Will you come back? Or leave me alone? Sons, sons, full of anger and steam. Did you find what you were searching for? Did you bury the dream? Daughters, daughters, return to the fold. Will you come back? Will you come back? Now you feel that I'm grown. She's alive, she's alive. Stop throwing up steam. He was a pillar.
from the nether void of the Shadow Walkers.